The Huddle with Rich and Arnie, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle with Rich and Arnie, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Of course, Rich gone all summer long. Brady here all summer long on a super busy Wednesday. How you doing, Ansel? What's going on today?
Well, don't say I never did nothing for you guys.
Oh, thank you very much for the Frosties. I do appreciate that. Because you know how much I love my Frosties. So
the question is, did you go to Wendy's to get your own Frosty before I bought you a Frosty?
No, but it did cross my mind. I'm not going to say it didn't. It did cross, because usually I go for my 3 o'clock Frosty, and that's documented. But I did not go today, because you know what? I couldn't go that way. I had to take the freeway, the 89 here. Because there was so much damn construction all over the place. I'm serious. It's crazy, though. But thank you very much for the Frosty. I do appreciate that.
Well, I got you a Frosty. I had Jason one and intern Caleb because it's his last day with us.
That's not really why you did that, but we do appreciate that.
Why did I really do it?
Well, I mean, obviously you're feeling guilty.
Guilty about what?
Well, stop. I mean, if you want me to air everybody's dirty laundry, let's do it.
Is this about how I'm playing basketball for 50 minutes today?
We had been setting up company guys all getting together, like guys' night out to play basketball. We've been doing this been setting this up for about 6 months now. And we decided on this day that we were going to play. And, like all night, like 5 hours. And Brady sends a text this morning like, you could play between what? Between 7:10 and 7:12? Seriously, you give us like a 5-minute window where you could play today. We've been planning this all week. Well, what's going on with you?
I'm going out to dinner tonight.
What? Going out to dinner tonight? So?
We got remotes tomorrow. We got remotes Thursday. I'm going out to dinner tonight. Look,
Maybe speak to your girlfriend. I'll take care of
this. It has nothing to do with that.
Come on.
I can play for an hour tonight, and that's all I need to dash all your hopes and dreams.
Hey, that's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Cancel dinner. Who would you rather, go to dinner or hang out with us?
I'd like to do both, which is why I'm doing both.
You could stretch it out. Go to dinner at 9 o'clock, for crying out loud.
Okay, fine. I'll play a little bit longer. How about that? We're getting there at 6:45. We're getting to the edge at 6:45.
Well, I got to run home. I got to change.
You're off the air at 6.
I know, but I got to take, it takes me 15 minutes to get home. I have to.
Bring your shorts here. Mine are in the car.
Well, wait. I got to take 4 ibuprofen, so I got to take that. I have to. What's so funny about that? I got to take 4 ibuprofen. I can't play with that. I got to take my, I got to rub down my Bengay, which takes about 10 minutes per leg. So there's a process to do here. What do you think? I just get dressed and I'm there to go? 10 minutes a leg, that's 20 minutes. Pop my ibuprofen. Then I got to get dressed. And you know what it is to get dressed? No, I'm serious. To put on my shorts, clothes, knee braces, goggles, high tops. That's like a 15-minute process right there. I just can't be rushing around like that.
Do not tell me that you are the guy who wears your basketball shoes in the car and walks them into the gym.
I don't usually, but you're rushing me tonight, obviously. You're rushing me. I usually just wear my slippers. I guess not tonight, because you guys give me like a 5-minute window.
Look, I get off the air at 6:30. Jason gets off the air at 6:30. We're immediately heading over there. We're going to get there at 6:45, and you get off the air at 6.
I tell you what we should do is, I think this would be really, Jason, I don't think you should play tonight. I think what you should do is come and do the play-by-play of us playing on 960 AM. What do you think about that? Just Arnie with the ball. He's going past Brady for the layup. Oh, that's good. How many people would actually tune in to hear? I think a lot of people would tune in to hear that, Brady, to be honest with you.
No,
Jason
should
do the play-by-play.
People want to tune in to hear the truth.
Oh, what? All right, how about doing play-by-play of the wiffle ball tournament we're going to be doing this?
Well, that would be funny.
No, that wouldn't be funny, actually. That wouldn't be good, because I'm just going to be striking out all over the place. You could at least hit the ball, though. You could at least do that. What would be funny is Jason doing the play-by-play. I mean, how much fun would that
be? We wanted Jason to play, but he's going home this weekend. He's not even going to be here for it.
What?
You know about that. I didn't know
what
the secret.
He's not going to be here for the Travis Roy tournament. He was going to be on our team, but
what?
He's leaving.
We were going to finally let you play on our team, and you're going home for what reason?
My cousin's coming in from Spain, and I don't like you.
My cousin's coming in. Well, the second part we know, but the cousin's coming in from Spain?
Oh, she's already here, so she came in already.
It's just a cousin. That's barely a relative, as far as, right? Our cousin's even barely a that's barely a relative, Brady.
No, they're relatives.
Barely.
Although I thought you were more of a relative to him because of how much time you've been spending.
That's true.
Here.
Uncle Arnie.
I'm closer than you than a relative. Than a cousin? You're going away for a cousin? It better not be like a fourth or fifth cousin.
It's first cousin.
Oh, big deal. I mean, where did that rank on the relative list?
Like third or fourth?
After the mom, dad, brother, sister.
That's four right off the bat, right?
And then grandma. Arnie.
I mean, you also have uncles and aunts. Grandmother and grandfather come before cousins, do they not?
Grandma will be there, too.
Here's the question.
Well, grandmas are not that important, either. Go ahead.
Is this cousin, like, close to you in age, or is it, like, a cousin that's, like, 10, or is it a cousin that's, like, 40?
No, she's like 40. But
oh, you are a loser.
So it's not even a cousin that you're really friends with and hang out with.
I had cousins.
I would say we hang out. She's just, you know, not in the same continent.
Oh, I had cousins that were older than me. I'd never even met because I don't care. I'm like, you're so far older than me. Yeah. Just don't even contact me, please. Unbelievable.
Seriously. If you had told me this person's like 20, between 19 and 25, I'd be like, okay, like you guys grew up together, like you're friends. This is 40 years old.
Yeah.
Listen, there's going to be cheeseburgers at the thing I'm going to. I got to say.
There's
going to
be all kinds of food at the Travis Roy Foundation. And there's going to be Arnie attempting to hit a wiffle ball and attempting to run.
Well, the last time you guys played wiffle ball, I made sure to watch it on Facebook Live. So I'm just going
to
do that.
We'll have to put it on Facebook Live, Brady. We'll have to do that. I mean, I'm disappointed you're not going to be doing the play-by-play. I think people would have liked to hear it on 960.
Maybe intern Caleb should just stay, and maybe since he's more committed to the team, maybe he should just play.
It's intern Caleb's last day because he's going back to school at Western Kentucky.
Yes.
Which is, by the way, a good lesson for you kids out there. That's why you study. So you can go to a good college. You know what I mean? No, nothing against Western Kentucky. What are you looking at me like that for, Brady? Nothing against Western Kentucky, but, you know... Okay, yes, it is against Western Kentucky. I take that back, but that's why you want to study, Brady. And by the way.
Are you saying intern Caleb's an example of what not to do in high school?
No, well, I'm what not. I took three times I took softball. I mean, no, I'm serious. Three semesters I took softball. Tell me, I took three semesters of softball. I got an A in two of the semesters. The third time, you don't get graded because they're like, you can't take the same class three times. And I got an A in windsurfing. So, which I took when I was at USC, University of Southern Colorado. So, I mean, what's your easiest class you've ever taken?
I took lacrosse coaching techniques.
Oh, my God. I didn't expect you to take something that easy.
I took lacrosse coaching techniques.
And you get an A in that, huh?
I got an A in it.
Yeah, Jason, you went to
Ithaca. And I've never done anything with lacrosse.
No, of course not.
My entire major is just a cakewalk.
I was going to say you went to Ithaca, so you're all your whole class. You have one, like, easy, like, what, women's studies or something like that, I'm sure.
I should have been that smart. Yeah. Media, aesthetics, and analysis. We watched.
What does that mean? How to coach peewee basketball? Or what exactly does that mean?
No. We watched TV. We watched The Sopranos. We watched Playmakers. Have you seen Playmakers, by the way, guys?
It was that old show that used to be on ESPN.
Yeah, I know. Wait a minute. You paid for an education, and your class was to watch Playmakers and what else?
Sopranos.
You see, this is why.
SpongeBob.
And you went to Ithaca. I can only imagine what you're learning at Western Kentucky. Seriously. I mean, oh, my God. This is the problem with the youth of America when they take classes like that. What class are you taking? Oh, I got to hustle in the class. We're talking about The Sopranos today. Why did they not have a class on The Kardashians? I don't understand.
I took a seminar on The Simpsons.
I want to know, what is the easiest class any of you've taken? And put your age so I know. I'm just kind of curious. 802-655-6672. 802-655-6672. I mean, I felt like a dope taking softball until I hear that Brady's taking lacrosse studies and gosh, everything you're taking, how to watch The Sopranos, for crying out loud. Huh?
Let's just say thank you to intern Caleb, because he's done a lot. He's been a really big help. And now, since you don't help me with anything, now that he's gone, I got to do it all myself again. Well,
he'll be back in 2 years when he can't find a job from Western Kentucky because he's taking classes like that. Who are you fooling, for crying out loud? All right, we got a lot to get to. Busy show today. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672. Of course, you want to send something in on the Town Fair Tire text line. Also, 802-655-6672. Real quick, tell everybody where we're going to be tomorrow.
The Poorhouse in South Burlington go to bat with Labatt, giving away a pair of Yankee tickets.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Also, we told you Friday we're going to be out at Little Fenway for the Travis Roy Foundation, the Wiffle Ball Tournament. People come out to that. We're going to go ahead and do the show there from 4 to 6. And then, of course, we got the Wiffle Ball game coming up at 7 o'clock right after that. We'll get to Josh Rosen's comment, the quarterback from UCLA. I thought that was really, really interesting. Also, Floyd Mayweather did an interview with Stephen A. Smith. Is that the interview you're talking about, Brady? I have a few comments on that also. Pat O'Connor from the Travis Roy Wiffle Ball Tournament will join us at 4:35, so we'll take a look at that. Also, take a look at back at the 07 Patriots. I saw that. Sorry, we discussed that a little bit yesterday. But first, Chris Sale. I was watching this yesterday. I'm like, they better not be putting in Kimbrel in the ninth. They better not be. Come on. He could have gone the ninth inning, Brady. We were actually going to call you up and go, Brady, come on, what are they doing?
Who's we? Were you with Jason again?
I was with Jason watching the game. Well, Jason,
do you guys ever not do anything together? Do you have separation anxiety?
Yes, we do. But Jason was doing the play-by-play of the game. And I'm like, they better not be bringing in Kimbrel in the ninth. And that's exactly what they did. I would have laughed if he would have blown the save. But it was a great performance by Sale.
Yeah, can't you just be happy at this performance? I mean, unbelievable. One walk, 13 strikeouts. Sale did exactly what we expected him to do. I joked with Tom Caron yesterday. I said, hey, this guy dominates the race. He struggled his last time out against the Indians. So what, is he going to get a no-hitter this time? Well, no, he only threw a two-hitter.
Right. It's not that I'm not happy. He had enough to go to the ninth, and I don't want to see this when it comes playoff time. If it's 1-0, 2-0, and he's on the mound and he's pitching like that, you got to go with him, man. Because anything that, if you throw Kimbrel out there and he blows a save, we'll be knocking you until the cows come home. You can't, especially the way Sale was pitching, got in a little bit of trouble. Was that the seventh or the eighth when he walked the opening batter? I think it was the seventh. But other than that, things went real smoothly. And how about Bradley Jr. With the big base running blunder? Also, Sale was just cruising along. He was unbelievable.
I mean, he struck out 13 in 8 scoreless innings, okay? It was his 7th straight win for the Red Sox. Sale's 15th game this year. 15 times he struck out at least 10, joining Pedro Martinez as the only player to do that in a season. Pedro did it 19 times back in 99. We can pretty much pencil Sale in for the Cy Young. He's averaging 13.5 strikeouts per 9 innings in his career against Tampa. He just owns these guys 4 times this year against them. He's had at least 12 strikeouts.
All that being said, I'll throw out some names that you tell me what everybody has in common. Obviously, David Price. Obviously, Clayton Kershaw.
They're all left-handed.
They're also far below subpar. I don't know when it comes to playoff time, is it not? Especially, Kershaw's had some bad numbers. He's had some good wins, but some bad numbers come playoff time. What is Sale's numbers?
Sale's never been in the playoffs.
Never been?
Never been.
Why do I think he'd been in the playoffs before?
If he has,
why did
Jason,
I think he was? Never. He'd never pitched in the playoffs. Do you think that's going to be a problem for somebody like him pitching in the playoffs for the first time?
No, I don't think so.
Well, it's a problem for Kershaw. It's a problem for Price.
Thing about Kershaw that's so overstated to me is that a lot of those struggles were documented. They were early in his career. I'm not as interested. You look at what he did last year.
Yes.
When he was pitching on one day rest last year to come out and pitch well. He was phenomenal last season.
He's not like he is in the regular season. Does he tire out? Or does he get nervous? I don't know. Are things different when it comes to playoff time? I mean, he's like maybe the best pitcher in all of baseball. Yeah, when it comes to, and I think it was St. Louis was one of the games he fell apart. He had like
he's struggling. He's pitched against St. Louis in the playoffs multiple times.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
So maybe it's just against the Cardinals. I don't know, but you don't think it comes up in Los Angeles every time playoff times come around and the Dodgers having, since 1988, I got to hear about Clayton Kershaw choking away. I'm curious to see. You can't automatically snap your fingers and think Sale's going to pitch just like this in the playoffs, Brady.
Here's the reason why I'm okay with him getting pulled yesterday. Chris Sale's thrown the second most pitches in baseball this season, and he averages the most pitches per start of any pitcher. 110 pitches a game he averages. They are riding this guy, and I do wonder, for a guy who's faded notoriously in the second half of seasons, I wonder if you start to worry about overuse at some point. He averages the most pitches per start in baseball, and then you talk about a team that if they get to the World Series, it's going to be another 40 innings for him. I wonder about overuse at some point.
Jason?
It's been, by the way, he never played in the postseason, but it was inspiring yesterday to watch how upset he was being taken out of the game when he'd thrown over 110 pitches. That's what I want to see out of every guy.
Was he upset? I just saw him sitting on the bench.
He was making a little bit of a fuss. He got over it quick. But
I thought when they panned in on him in the eighth inning, I'm like, he doesn't know he's coming out yet. I know Kimbrel's warming up, and I get the feeling that he thinks it's up to him. When the announcer's like, well, Kimbrel's coming in the pitch of the ninth, I'm like, does he know that, or does he think he's coming back out for the ninth?
Well, you know? Sale's never been a guy with the Red Sox to really have grief about this. Remember, it was like the second series of the year against Detroit. It was in a day game. We were waiting to come on. We thought he should have stayed out there. They took him out after the eighth inning, and he said after the game, basically, it's the manager's decision. He made no bones about it.
That's another way of saying I should have stayed in.
But the thing about Sale that's so amazing to me is, I mean, he had 13 strikeouts in one walk, and this isn't an abnormality for him. This is regular stuff from him. This is typical day at the office. For a guy that throws 96 miles an hour, he's got unbelievable ability to be in the strike zone. Now, he is sometimes effectively wild, right? He means to throw it inside. It'll go way up, and guys will swing at it. He is effectively wild in some spots. But he threw 80 strikes and 32 balls yesterday. I mean, you're talking about nearly a 3-to-1 strike-to-ball ratio. Generally, guys that throw that hard don't have the ability to control the strike zone like he does. That's what amazes me the most.
You just gave me a stat that he threw 80 strikes and 32 balls, which is amazing. He threw a two-hitter, which is amazing. Yet, why would you even chance bringing in Kimbrel when the guy was... And I know it's just... If this was a playoff game, there's no way you take him out, right? No way, no how.
You're going to the best closer in the American League right now.
No,
I'm just saying...
Yeah, I hate when people do that.
112 pitches.
So what's another 10?
You want to leave him in to get to 130 pitches when you've got the best closer?
You didn't have to do it yesterday. You didn't have to do it yesterday. But if this is like a big game in the playoffs, I can't. You just said 80-to-30 ratio. How am I going to take him out like that?
Okay, so then here's exactly.
I got to give me one batter in the ninth. How about that?
That's what I'm saying. Okay. That's what would happen. Maybe he'd start. If it's game 7 of the World Series, he starts the ninth, guy gets on base, and he's out anyways.
Then again, you told me, is it Kimbrel or a lot of relievers like to start the ninth and come in? They don't like to come in with either a runner on base.
No, a lot of. I mean, everyone would prefer to start with the inning clean.
Right.
Andrew in Ferrisburg says maybe Sale fades so much in the second half because he's pitching in the ninth inning too much during the regular season. It's not even so much. It's the number of pitches, not necessarily how deep you go into the game.
Now,
to get through eight innings on 110 pitches like he did yesterday, that's pretty darn good.
Right.
That's actually pretty economical. A guy, like I said, 13 strikeouts and just one walk. But if you're going to be averaging 110 pitches to start, I do wonder about some factor of overuse.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I could be way off base on this, but you're the baseball expert. There's other pitchers in baseball, like a Clayton Kershaw, that can get as many strikeouts, but they prefer to try to get you to hit it on the ground and get you out on a 5-pitch inning than try to strike everybody out because it's going to be too much on their arm.
Absolutely. And the thing with Sale...
Well,
the thing I'm telling you with Sale, though, is he threw so many strikes that... I mean, to get 13 strikeouts and only have thrown... That's actually pretty good. I mean, if you're gonna strike out the side every inning on 14 pitches, then it's not.
Would
all
you ever
that
tell
stressful.
Your pitcher, don't try to strike him out. Let's try to get him to hit the ground balls or something.
I say pitch to contact. Yes, that's a
pitch to contact.
Pitch to contact is the fancy way of saying let him hit it.
So you don't like when they your pitcher tries to strike.
I don't like when my guy goes 12 strikeouts, 5 walks, and 3-2 on everybody else. And he's out in the fourth inning. That's what I don't like.
Right. Okay. Because. Maybe Sale's, going too far with the strikeouts. I don't know, though, but he's pitching so great.
But he's being economical. Yeah, 110 pitches.
Right, which is amazing.
In eight innings. I mean, that's not even, let's see, that's like 14 an inning or something. That's what you want.
It's crazy. All right, Brady saw the 30 for 30 on Reggie Lewis. You guys remember Reggie Lewis. A lot of us remember Reggie Lewis. So we'll get to that a little bit. Plus, we'll talk about the Patriots and their new team playing. We came up with a lot of great names. Brady's going to go through some of them. And then, of course, Pat O'Connor joining us at about 4:35 from the Travis Roy Foundation. It's a busy show right here on 101.3 ESPN.
And that was a long enough break. We're back to the huddle with Rich and Arnie right here on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. You want to jump in, 802-655-6672, but a better way to get a hold of us is on the Town Fair Tire text line, which we're getting a lot of, 802-655-6672. Like a couple of them, like Eric and Milton. Start with that one, Brady.
Eric and Milton says, with a year of talking about record-breaking in baseball, what is the strikeout record, and do you think Chris Sale can or will come close? Well, the strikeout record is 383, effectively.
For a year.
For a single season.
Single season.
That's Nolan Ryan. That's actually eighth all-time for a single season. The top seven, though, are all from the 1800s. So if we're talking about baseball since the 1900s, Nolan Ryan has the most.
Now, I asked you, I said, well, that has to be because Nolan Ryan got a lot more starts. You got more starts back then. Is it because it was a four-man rotation more back then, I would think? It has to be because now it's five, six, seven-man, eight-man rotation.
Could be also just going more starts, going deeper into games. Also, Nolan Ryan is known for going deeper into
Sale
games.
Sale is pretty deep, too. So Nolan Ryan had 39 starts that year. Right now, Chris Sale has 23.
You got to figure he's going to get to
30, give or take.
30 to 32 if it stays healthy, don't skip, all that.
I don't even know if he'll pitch at the end of the year if they have it wrapped up. Maybe miss a start there. So that's not important, though, the strikeout record. Though I don't even think the win total record, is it, for the Dodgers? At this rate, they're going to have 114 to 115. They're going to miss. I know you don't want them to break Seattle's record, do you?
No, I don't want them to, but it doesn't guarantee you a championship.
Yeah, but don't you get tired of hearing that the team with the best, most wins never winning a World Series, and you see Seattle's name up there, or no?
No, because I'm just used to everything being negative, so.
All right, what's the other one? I know we had another one, too. I don't remember what it was.
Trevor in St. Albans says, you put in Kimbrel in the ninth inning because of the assets you gave up to get him. And I disagree.
Disagree with that.
I disagree with that because you gave up better assets to get Sale. I mean, if you're playing by that game.
Yeah, you know what? Bingo. How about if I just – it's not even so much that. It's just the feel of things, Brady. I'm not saying you have to keep him in the ninth inning every time. But as you said yesterday, 80 to 30 ratio, two hits. It's not like the Rays are juggernauts. He was just cruising along. He wanted to come back out.
Didn't
have to do it in the regular season, though.
Yeah, my whole point is this. You've got the best closer in the American League right now. You've got an all-star. You've got a guy who's been largely unhittable. And
keep him
sharp. Got that guy for a reason. Yeah. You've got that guy for a reason.
All right, get to the 30 for 30 that you saw on Reggie Lewis, because this was one of the big tragedies of the NBA.
Yeah, this was really interesting to me. So it wasn't just on Reggie Lewis, but it was called the Dunbar Boys, and it was from about Dunbar High School.
Right, Baltimore?
In Baltimore. Yeah. In which all five starters from that team went on to play in the NBA. Reggie Lewis is one. Muggsy Bogues is the other.
Muggsy Bogues.
David Wingate is another. So I mean, that's three
of the
five.
Went on the Georgetown. Man.
Yep. Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's an incredible story in its own right. But to me, about Reggie Lewis, and look, I'm too young to really appreciate how good he was. I've had people tell me he played at Northeastern. People said he's the best player ever to come out of the America East Conference. You talk about UVM, and then he played at the Celtics. And he was a team captain there, taking over for the likes of Larry Bird and Kevin McHale. And he was averaging, 17 points a game for his career. And his career and life were cut tragically short. And the thing that was amazing to me also was, I mean, he got, he fainted essentially in a playoff game.
Yeah.
They took him off the floor. They said he needed to get a pacemaker in his heart like the next day. And then 3 months later, a doctor came out and refuted that. And he didn't get the surgery. He didn't get the procedure. And then the first time he steps on the floor to work out again, he died on the court. It was an unbelievable story to me.
Yeah, if you'd not seen him play, and obviously there's YouTubes on this guy, he was really phenomenal. Remember, he averaged 17 a game for a kid. When you came out of Northeastern, you're lucky to even make a team, yet alone get playing time, yet alone for the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
And the numbers he was putting up, not only just blew me away, I think it blew everybody away. The whole entire NBA. No way I knew he was that good. He was one of better players in the NBA. What happened there is just absolutely tragic in that situation. I mean, just my goodness. I think it was, 5 years on the Celtics or 6 years?
87 and 93, I think.
87. All right, so 6 years on the Celtics before he passed away. Yeah. I think he was only 27 years old or something like
that. Yeah, his 4 years at Northeastern, I mean, he scored nearly 3,000 points. That's still the record in scoring at Northeastern. So it used to be called the ECAC North. That predated the America East Conference name. But people here who are older fans, I want to hear. I mean, we talk about UVM. I mean, some of you guys probably saw Reggie Lewis play. Do you remember him in college? How unbelievable was he? Somebody who's been a fan of America East Conference basketball, I want you to call in. I want you to text in and tell us what you remember about Reggie Lewis, because he's one of only three players to win the Conference Player of the Year award three times. Taylor Coppenrath of UVM is another, and Jameel Warney, the kid from Stony Brook who just graduated, is another. But Reggie Lewis, I mean, you think about how good Taylor Coppenrath was, and Reggie Lewis is better.
You know what's interesting? I was looking up an article on him. At the time that he died, he was one of six players from 88 to 93 that posted at least 7,500 points, 1,500 rebounds, 1,000 assists, and 500 steals. The other five, all Hall of Famers, Barkley, Drexler, Jordan, Karl Malone, and Chris Mullin. So he put up the stats that those guys put up with the other five Hall of Famers, which is absolutely insane when you think about that.
Brian in Richmond says that Lewis would have played with Len Bias, and yeah, he would have. But yeah. Len Bias was, you know, Len Bias died right after he was drafted in 86, and Lewis came in 87. So think about, that's the other thing you think about, just from the Celtics standpoint of this, is that you had Bird, you had McHale, you had all of these guys that were starting to age out and get towards the end of their career. And you could have replaced that with Len Bias and Reggie Lewis, and neither one of them were able to play for very long. And in Bias's case, not at all.
Okay, I don't know the answer to this. You may not be able to look it up right now at the spur of the moment. I'll rely more on our listeners on this. Did the Celtics get recompensated for the draft pick of Len Bias? And if they did that result in Reggie Lewis? I'm not sure. To be honest, you said 86 and 87. Is that what it was? It was back to back. I'm not sure. I thought at one point they did petition, but they waited a long time because they didn't want to do it right away after Len's death. But at one point they did go to the NBA and said, you know, we would, you know, oh, I think they petitioned to have an extra spot open on the roster or something. They had to petition something for the NBA. So maybe it didn't result in a draft pick that resulted in Reggie Lewis, but they had the petition to get it, but it was absolutely horrible. It was just absolutely just terrible for the Boston Celtic fans. And like Brady said, if you want to go ahead and get it on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672, 802-655-6672. But as you said, perhaps the best player to come out of the American East Conference in basketball ever.
Yeah, it was fascinating to me. And the other thing that was fascinating, you know, there was a double feature last night on 30 for 30. The other one was called the Morningside Five. It was about the Morningside High School team in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I know Morningside. Yeah.
And in 1992, they had five guys that were absolute stars. One of them was Dominic Ellison, who went on to play at Washington State, ended up getting kicked out of the program. Just about these five guys that were absolute stars. They were rock stars. They were awesome. And none of them ever materialized the way they should for various reasons. And that was another one that was interesting yesterday.
I like when you see stories like Clayton Kershaw's roommate friend in high school is what's his face, the Lions quarterback, Stafford. They were friends in high school.
Yeah, they were.
Best
friends. Amanda,
yeah, I know that. Is that just crazy how that works out? One's the star pitcher in baseball, the other one's a big no-name quarterback in the NFL. That's just crazy.
You think about high schools that put out one to two unbelievable stars.
Yes.
Imagine those guys being teammates. And imagine having all five, like in the case of the Muggsy Bogues High School. And you were talking about, I mean, this is not quite related to, people are asking, how did the Celtics get the Len Bias pick in general? How did they get that high up in the draft because they were so good? Well, they traded Gerald Henderson to Seattle
right
for the number two pick. So that's how the Celtics acquired.
Well, that was a pretty good deal there.
Number two to get, well, it would have been, but Bias never played.
Well, I'm just saying Gerald Henderson was a pretty popular Boston Celtic, but
yeah.
To get rid of him for a number two pick, boy, that's, think nowadays to get the number two pick would have cost you a little bit more than a Gerald Henderson type player. That's for damn sure. Yeah, so interesting stuff when I went to that. We didn't have a chance to get to the Planes. Real quick, just give me a couple names that we had for the Planes.
Yeah, we asked yesterday, if you could name the Patriots' new team Planes, what would they be? Mine would have been In Bill and We Trust. That's what I would have done for my one and two. You wanted to go with Spygate and Deflategate.
Or Cheatgate or something like that, yes.
Larry says Myra and Billy. Myra meaning Robert Kraft's now deceased wife's name. I honestly don't even know what Billy is, so I'd have to ask about that.
Okay.
Will says Capaletti and Stingley, former Patriots.
John Capaletti.
Must be. And Daryl Stingley, I mean, he's the wide receiver, died on the
field. He didn't die on the field. He got paralyzed.
Yeah, he got paralyzed. Yeah, that's right. Yes.
John Capaletti? Am I missing something on that? I wonder if the guy that went to Penn State already did something for Joey, the movie and all that. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing.
Kim wants to name it Pat's Nation in Foxborough. I'm not a big fan of that.
No, I don't like that one either.
Jared wants to go Flying Elvis and Pat Patriot. Those are good.
That's okay.
Flying Elvis is the name of the new Patriots logo. Pat Patriot is the old one. Jim says TB12 and three phases.
Three phases?
Like offense, defense, special teams.
Oh, come on. Jeez, come on.
And Jerrica from Plattsburgh says, how about Robert and aircraft?
I've heard a bunch of people did the aircraft with the AIRKRAFT, which I think is cute on words, a good play on words on that one. So I like that. So thanks to the listeners for putting all that in. When we get back, though, who's coming up next, Brady?
Pat O'Connor, he is part of the Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament. It's on his property. He's the guy who had Little Fenway and Little Wrigley Field built on his property. And Glenn from Moncton says Gino Cappelletti.
Yeah, what did I say?
You said John Cappelletti.
Oh, no, I meant Gino Cappelletti. So it's still the running back from Gino Cappelletti, the running back from Penn State, right?
No, that's John Cappelletti.
Oh, that's John Cappelletti. All right, so I got it mixed up.
So, I'm going to have to go and look it up now.
Now I'm mixed up. All right, we'll look that up. All right, thank you, Glenn. We'll talk to Pat O'Connor when we get back right here on 101.3 ESPN.
It's The Huddle, where Brady's in for Rich, Jason's in for Brady, and no one is in for Arnie. Because how are you going to replicate that? 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back here in the huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. So we've been telling you that we're extremely excited on Friday to be playing in the Travis Roy Wiffle Ball Tournament. We're also just excited to be there. We'll be doing our show there from 4 up until about 6:30 until Red Sox baseball. And then the main attraction will take the stage at Little Fenway. Well, to get a little more information on the Wiffle Ball Tournament and the Travis Roy Foundation that we're there supporting, we bring in Pat O'Connor, who's in with us in studio. Pat, you're actually the owner of the property that the tournament is on.
We actually moved to Vermont in 1981 and moved into this property in 1992. And yes, we started Little Fenway back in 2001, and this tournament's been going on for now 16 years.
So, but you built the property for yourself just because you liked the idea of it, or did you build it solely for the Travis Roy Foundation?
No, we actually built it just for family and friends and have a good time. I'm a baseball junkie, and we were traveling to Boston every summer with our kids, and I said, why not bring a little bit of Fenway Park closer to us? So we decided, drew it up on a napkin, and showed it to a few friends and dug a few holes, and next thing you know, we had Little Fenway up.
And then you've got Little Wrigley Field and a little Field of Dreams. Now, I have been there. I've been to the property. There was a tournament back in September of last year. I didn't play in it, but I was just there for it. So I've seen it. It's unbelievable. How long did it take to get built?
Well, you know, it's never done. We're always improving it. But the first field took about 6 months to build, and we opened it on the 4th of July in 2001. And that's when I realized, wow, this thing is bigger than I imagined because people really had so much fun. And then with the growth of the Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament, we needed another field in order to raise more money by having more teams participate. And so that was built in 2007, 2008, Little Wrigley.
It is fun. I've got the pictures on my phone still from September. You know, you clear out your phone a lot of times. I've cleared out a lot of pictures on my phone. I do not get rid of those. So I will be posting them on Twitter. You said now 16 years for the Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament. Why did you want to be involved in it? Why did you want to have it on your property?
Well, what happened was, first of all, on September 15th, 2001, we had planned an event for the South Burlington Little League team, and then 9/11 hit. Mm-hmm. And so instead of recognizing the team, or in addition to recognizing the team, we decided to have a fundraiser, and we raised some money. So that sort of was when the light bulb went off that the fields could be used for a greater good. Then I have two sons that played hockey for many years, and I knew Travis Roy's story. His injury at Boston University, and read his book called 11 Seconds. And when I read that book and finished it, I said, well, why not I call the foundation and see if they'd like to have a tournament up here. So I called the foundation in 2002, and we had a one-day event in June of 2002, 7 teams, and we raised $4,000. And everybody had a great time, even though it rained the whole day.
Well, the Travis Roy story is really a heart
It's a heartbreaking one, but also an uplifting one in a lot of ways. As you alluded to, Travis Roy, a college hockey player who certainly looked like he was on his way to the NHL, played at Boston University, and then a freak injury 11 seconds into his first game of his freshman year left him paralyzed from the waist down. He does a lot of motivational speaking now. Now, I have never met Travis Roy, but when I got here, that's one of the things on my list here that I have to do. He's going to be here this weekend?
He will be there this weekend. He and his family, and he has a couple of teams that he follows very closely, you know, with relatives. Travis is a huge inspiration to everyone involved in the tournament. We have an incredible team of volunteers. This community is very special. It's amazing how much people give their time and their resources. And it's all about having fun. You start with having fun, and then people are talking about their games at the water cooler, and the fundraising just takes off, and the donors are amazing.
Well, Pat O'Connor, the Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament, is here with us on the huddle. We will be doing our show out there from Little Fenway 4 till 6:30 on Friday, and then Arnie and I are playing. We got a couple listeners. We got a couple ringers that you've hooked us up with. How many other teams are in this? We're one of what, 34?
34 teams, and they all are really trying to get their name on the Rock of Champions, which is a piece of granite that's on the property, which has all of the winners from the last 15 years.
Now, I played 4 years of college baseball. I still play in a men's league. I drive back and forth a couple weekends every summer to Albany to play with the teams I played with for the last 5 or 6 years. But Arnie, he's not so good, and we need to be like in the B or C team division. Where are we seated in this thing? Do we have a chance to win?
You have a chance to win, yes. I think the neat thing about the format is everyone has a chance to win. You play 3 games round robin in your division, and then there's a wild card team, and then there's a couple lottery picks. So there's a chance to get in the playoffs, and we've seen many different teams win over the years, and a lot of them are surprises.
Well, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we'll be there playing. We've got the 101.3, Team 101.3 ESPN will be hanging out there, so come hang out with us as well. All the teams have fundraised. So where does the fundraising money go? Because it goes to the Travis Roy Foundation directly, I imagine, but then does it get siphoned out to various other organizations?
100% of it goes to the Travis Roy Foundation, and Travis is Foundation is committed to basically satisfying grants for motorized wheelchairs, ramps for their homes, all kinds of adaptive equipment for spinal cord injured survivors. So most of the money goes towards those grants. The rest of the money will go towards research into hopefully finding a cure or accelerating that pace towards finding a cure.
If somebody couldn't get in and able to play and wasn't able to fundraise for their team, what if someone wants to just come hang out and make a donation? What about concession stands? What other things are going on at the tournament that we can help raise money for?
Well, there's a lot of things going on over the weekend from Friday night, the 11th through the 13th. And we have concessions. We have food trucks. We have a kids' tent. We even have a kids' game going on Saturday. And there's Home Run Derby. So guests can come and sign up for Home Run Derby. It's free admission, free parking. It's just a great time. A lot of things going on the side. There's also a silent auction and raffles going on. We expect to have, you know, over 1,000 people there. And just a lot of fun all day long.
Now, we're using the skinny yellow bats because I really want to try to go deep over the green monster at Fenway. We're using the skinny yellow bats, though?
We are using the skinny yellow bats, so I'm sorry Arnie won't be able to bring the old Flintstone back.
That's the one he wants. So, well, we played in a wiffle ball tournament in Winooski back in, like, May, and I homered there, but I really want to test it at Little Fenway, but the skinny yellow bats it's tough. Even I was a pitcher. I wasn't a hitter.
It's tough, but I also tell you one of the keys is having a good pitcher. We do have a speed limit on it, and the umpires monitor that. So if you can get a pitcher on your team that can throw some junk up there, it's amazing what that'll do for you.
Now, we have a full nine. We have a full lineup out there in the field. How big is Little Fenway? I mean, like I said, I've seen it. Is it like 100 feet? Is it 150 feet? Nine people seems a little congested.
It does. That's an impression that some people get when they first see the field. It is about 100 feet to center field, so it's small, and the bases are 41 and a half feet
okay.
apart. And the mound's pretty close, about half the distance of a major league park. So in the overall park itself is one quarter scale of Fenway and Wrigley and Little Field of Dreams. So
how'd you get the Citgo sign out there? Because you've got the full replica Citgo sign in left field. That's the thing that impresses me most. That and at Fenway, you've got the retired jersey numbers out in right field.
Yeah, we just added one too, 34 for David Ortiz. Oh. So yeah, the Citgo sign lights up at night and it can be seen from many miles away. But that was part of the, I think, beauty of the parks is to try to make them to have the the trademark of Fenway in Boston, which is the Citgo sign, the scoreboard, pesky pole, etc.
How long until we get seating on your green monster?
Well, that's something that's been proposed many times. It's been kicked around. There's a little bit of insurance and liability to think about in that process. But right now, it is the 2001 vintage of the field.
Okay.
So you have the old time scoreboard on there and so forth, with the Morse code on it. I guess every 7 years or so, we get this pressure to build another field. So now we're also taking ideas on what the fourth field
Little Dodger be. Stadium or Little Ebbets Field. Let's just go throwbacks here. Travis Roy Foundation, the Wiffle Ball Tournament that we're going to be playing in coming up later this week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday with us on 101.3 ESPN. Now that the Cubs have won a World Series, does Little Wrigley need some kind of banner?
Well, yeah, we have the W, so we can put that win up there for the World Series win. I think now the question will be, when will we have a Cubs-Red Sox World Series? So
yeah.
That would be fun to see.
You get two teams out there. One's the Cubs, one's the Red Sox. And you'll just alternate home field. So, hey, you said over 1,000 people we think are coming there. Give us the address. Give us the directions. Because I remember when I went out there the first time, it's a little bit off the beaten path, but it's well worth it. So how are we getting there?
Yeah, that's part of the mystique, I guess. You drive up a dirt road, you go over a one-lane bridge, and then in the middle of nowhere is the Citgo sign and the Green Monster. You go out Route 15 towards Jericho, and you turn left on Silly Hill Road, and then you stay left at the fork, and you're on Hanley Lane, and then it turns into Sawmill Road. So the address is 17 Sawmill Road.
17 Sawmill Road. We're playing 7 o'clock on Friday, 101.3 ESPN, 7 o'clock on Friday. We're doing our show there from 4 till 6:30. We'll get a half hour of warm-ups, and we'll get ready. We're going to try to bring home the title, but more importantly, trying to bring home awareness for the Travis Roy Foundation, trying to raise money for the Travis Roy Foundation, and really trying to, you know, help in the recovery process when it comes to spinal injuries. Travis Roy, an inspiration. Pat O'Connor, an inspiration as well. The builder, well, not maybe the builder, but the designer and the owner of Little Fenway, Little Wrigley, and Little Field of Dreams, the Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament, is there on his property. Hey, we look forward to seeing you on Friday. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Brady.
Very cool. We just tweeted out the pictures. Guaranteed to hit the Green Monster. Guaranteed.
Yeah, hit the Green Monster. Can you hit it over it?
I don't know if I can hit over it, but I can hit the wall, right? I mean, there's no problem with that, am I?
I mean, you just got to be able to hit a ball 100 feet. I think you could do that.
I think I could do that. I'm hoping I could do that. I wouldn't have done it the first time we played, but I got, again, I'm very disappointed we're not going to be able to use the Fred Flintstone type bat. I'm very disappointed.
Well,
about
look,
that
it's right not now. There is a home run derby. Maybe you can bring it out for that.
No, maybe you can put something in the ball that makes it a little heavier. Will that work?
What you would need to do is tape it with athletic tape.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. But you could see that though.
Extremely dangerous.
I have to go ahead and find the way to cork my bat or something.
Here's how you cork a yellow wiffle ball bat. You cut off the top with a saw.
Yes.
Okay. And then you stuff
pebbles.
No. You stuff the like the crate stuff that goes under a bed, like the egg crate thing that goes like a mattress.
Have you done this before?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And then you duct tape the bat back together.
Yeah, but then they could see it though. They could see the duct tape. Somebody's going to call me out for that. I don't want to cheat a charity event. Well, I don't mind cheating, but I gotta go ahead and swing for the fences, Brady. The only problem is, I don't know if I'm going to bat left-handed or right-handed, so I'm going to try.
You're going to throw your back out either way.
Yeah. Wow. Which way should I go, lefty or righty? What do you think?
It's a shorter porch and no monster.
I know that. Right. I know that. Don't think I'm not looking at the porch, Brady. That's for damn sure. All right, we're going to come back. We'll finish off our number one. Very excited about that. We'll talk a little bit about the Patriots heading into their preseason opener, and already there's an injury. We'll touch on that right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Conversation and let your opinion be heard by dialing 802-655-6672 or tweet into the show at 101.3 ESPN.
All right, hour one flying by. Obviously, Brady's starting to see it my way, I guess, because when I told you you don't have, if you have six running backs, you don't have one running back. And I guess now there's, when you have five running backs, you don't have a running back because Gillis Lee has, what, a hamstring problem or something like that, Brady? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, Mike Gillis Lee out of practice for the last couple of days working on the lower field. We heard that yesterday from Zach Cox, but he's not going to play tomorrow, it looks like. He's got that hamstring injury. We also now know there's a lot of injuries for the Patriots. Matthew Slater, Shea McClellan, they're not going to play. Eric Rowe's probably not going to play. Nate Solder's not going to play. Danny Amendola's not going to play. Gronk isn't going to play. And now we know just now that Tom Brady and Brandon Cooks won't play. They're not injured, but they're still not going to play tomorrow.
So lots of injuries going on, or is this kind of like fake injuries where they just don't want to go ahead and play and Belichick's just running up the injury roster just to say that they're not going to play? You don't really even have to do that, though, but he likes to play games like
well,
that.
Well, Gillis Lee not playing is
that's a real thing.
That's
yes,
a big deal. Eric Rowe not playing, I think, is a big deal because that's a guy who's going to be your third defensive back. And that with how important the slot corner is in today's NFL, that's important. And I'm a bit surprised that Brady and Cooks aren't playing. I understand you don't want to see him get hurt, but...
No, really? Well, they're going to play you in the preseason, but...
Yeah, but they're not going to play tomorrow, and that surprises me.
Really? I didn't think that... I think you really play Brady, the second or third game, because they don't play in the first or the fourth. So I think that's really where most of the starters play in any of the teams out there is usually the second or the third.
Yeah, but I don't think so. I think a lot of teams do play their number ones early. Now, Tom Brady doesn't need the work.
No, I get that, right.
And you don't want him to get hurt, but I'm surprised to see Cook's not out there. It means lots of time for Jimmy Garoppolo tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, it was, what was it? I was thinking of John Cappelletti, right?
Gino Cappelletti is the guy you needed to be thinking of.
Right. I was thinking of John Cappelletti, the old running back for Penn State, who was the movie Something for Joey, whose younger brother passed away from leukemia. And, of course, his coach was... Joe Paterno at Penn State. The caller, you guys were talking about Gino Cappelletti. So, gosh, there you go. So we got that straightened out.
Mr. Patriot.
I'm confused now. And even as you were telling me the story, I kept getting it screwed up. As we were looking it up, Brady, I kept getting the thing screwed up. So, all right, hour number one in the books. We're cruising along. Brady, when we get back, we'll reset. We'll tell everybody we're going to be Thursday and Friday. Also, when were the Patriots exactly hated? This is a story that came out about this by Bill Barnwell, right, Brady's of ESPN.
That's right. Very interesting. On the moment the Pats became hated.
I think it was like 2 minutes after I was born in 1963. No, that's not true. That's not true. Well, close to it, I think. No, we'll tell you exactly when they're hated when we come back right here on 101.3 ESPN. All right, everybody, good afternoon. You're in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. It's a hump day. Let's get you through your hump day on the downside of the week. So much going on, and boy, the summer's flying by, Brady. It's absolutely just cruising on by. Real quick, I want to tell you, Jason got turned down for his apartment, the one that was $900 fully furnished. What was the reason they gave you?
They said that my landlord references didn't work because I'd only had 4 months of them. I said the apartment was for a college student. I don't understand.
So what, they said that basically you didn't they were worried about you as a possible tenant?
You're very shady, I think. I think the definition was you look very shady and we don't want you in our house. Is that pretty much the way it went there?
There was the 5 foot, 250-pound girl who said she would live with you.
Yes. Jason's still looking for a place to live, so if anybody wants a roommate, you could text it. Or a sublet on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. 802-655-6672. And the only, qualifications? You have to be female between the ages of 21 and 101, right? Is that, you have that right or what?
Yeah, that's about right.
I mean, and you're very clean. You'll clean the house. You'll sleep on the couch. It doesn't make a difference as long as you have a roof over your head. And please do this for him because if he doesn't find a place, he's going to want to stay with me. And we just have a very small place. Right? We have a very small place, Brady. I can't have Jason.
Your kid is going to be gone all year playing junior hockey.
Very small,
can't
Brady.
Can he stay in your kid's room?
Very, very small house that we have. Very small house. So, yes, find Jason a place to stay. So he doesn't have to stay with me. That's for sure. Maybe he'll stay with you, Brady. You have an extra room there. Maybe go.
I have an apartment. You have a house with like five bedrooms.
I know that. It's very small, though. Very small. Eight bedrooms that we have. Very small. So not really a lot of room for Jason. But we'll find you a place, Jason. We will. We'll find you something.
Thank you, Arnie. I appreciate it.
Or we'll just convert your car into a van. Yeah. Just have you stay like that also. All right. A busy hour for you. 802-655-6672 or on the Town Fair Tire text line. Also at 802-655-6672. Going to get to the Patriots because Bill Barnwell had an article on ESPN and kind of an interesting one, Brady, wasn't it?
Really talked about the moment the Patriots became hated and the moment they went from being lovable underdogs to super team and super villains. And a lot of it focuses on Spygate and the 2007 year where the Patriots racked up a ton of points. They were outscoring everybody by 25 points a game. You've got the allegations of cheating and all that. But remember, before all that, even before you hated the Patriots, yeah. Arnie, they were lovable underdogs. Think about this. Back when they won the Super Bowl in the 2001 season, 2002 the year, when they beat the Rams, they were 14-point underdogs. They were looking to dethrone the greatest show on turf. Everybody loves the underdog. You had a team called the Patriots looking to win a Super Bowl right after 9/11, just months after 9/11. America rallied around that. The Patriots were not, and they had this quarterback that was drafted in the sixth round that was coming from obscurity and proving everybody wrong. People loved the come up with the Patriots. And then at some point in 2007, it all just hit and went the other way.
When was the Tuck Rule?
2003.
Okay, as far as I'm concerned,
I'm sorry, 2002.
I thought it was 2002. As far as I'm concerned, they didn't hate the Patriots at that point, but as the years went on and Brady had a great career, we go back to 2002. I wish I could get a DeLorean and become an official so I could say, no, that's a fumble. Hey, don't make up any rules like the Tuck Rule, because I feel like he got away with something there, just like he's always gotten away with something, Brady. I feel like he's gotten away with something with that damn Tuck Rule. I remember watching that game thinking to myself, there's no way they're not going to rule that's a fumble. And I think that's what started the whole thing, even though we may not know that at the time. It took us many years after that.
See, that didn't bother me, really.
Oh,
that,
get out of here.
It didn't bother me, maybe because I at that point, I was naive and a kid. I mean, I was only 14 years old at that point. So for me, it was all about watching a game that's played in the snow, in a driving snowstorm like you think about in your backyard. Vinatieri hits this fairy tale kick through the snow as the flakes are falling down. You've got, again, an unheralded quarterback. And even at that point, Brady had won a Super Bowl, but he wasn't doing anything particularly spectacular at that point. I mean, you think about this, too. We talk about the Patriots being a super team, in quotes. Did you know that at the Super Bowl against the Rams, they elected to announce the Patriots as the Patriots rather than player by player because they said they don't have enough individual names that the fans are even to know who they are?
Yeah, just come on out. We're going to roll them out as a team, for crying out loud. 802-655-6672. Was that one in Atlanta, right? That Super Bowl was in Atlanta?
The one they beat the Rams. I thought it was in New Orleans.
Was it? I don't know. I went to a couple. I can't remember.
It was in a dome. I can tell you
if it was in New Orleans, and I don't remember anything about it then because too many hurricanes on that point. Remember, and look, not to pick on the Patriot fans, they were never around. Remember, the team was talking about leaving and all that. The Patriot fans were far and scarce when the team was having troubles in the Grogan days. That's for damn sure. And there are a lot of Johnny-come-lately Patriot fans. Certainly that's true there, Brady.
There's a lot of Johnny-come-lately fans with any fan base that was downtrodden.
Yeah, like Golden State Warriors, that's for damn sure.
Even my Seahawks. How many people were Seahawks fans when I was a Seahawks fan watching Rick Meyer and John Freeze quarterback the team? How many of those fans were really around? So I don't put much stock in that, but to me, this is what it always stems from. We love to watch the little guy build himself up, and then we love to watch that guy eventually fall down.
Yep.
Even the Warriors, people love Steph Curry on the come up. Now people are calling them villains because of getting Durant.
But we hate the Cowboys because of the fans. That's a big part of it. It's not so much because of their winning. It was because of how about them Cowboys and the fans and the arrogance in the state of Texas. That's a big reason why we hate the Cowboys. I don't know if the Patriot fans are the reason why we hate the Patriots. so much. And also, we hate the Warriors because they added Kevin Durant and because Steph Curry is cocky. That's why I'm tired of his cockiness.
That's the other thing. People say they hate the Patriots because of Deflategate and because of Spygate. So I think there's generally a sense of resentment and hate whenever a team wins, right? Whenever a team is a habitual winner, we develop a dislike for them, okay? I totally believe that. But then we also develop a dislike for the way that we perceive that they win. We perceive the Patriots as winners because they cheat. We perceive the Yankees as winners because they buy their championship.
Oh, we've seen the Patriots cheat before. There's no doubt about that. By the way, I hate the Patriots because of Eric and Colchester. That's why I hate the Patriots.
Because of their fans?
No, because he writes stuff like this. If not the incomplete pass, it would have been roughing the passer as he was hit on the head by Woodson. So no matter what, that the Patriots were going to go ahead and win that game. This is why I hate the Patriots there, Brady. This is why.
I will say this. I don't know that that would have happened because back then you could actually touch the quarterback back in 2002.
But you know what? Who knows? I mean, it really feels like the NFL was bending over backwards. By the way, real quick on that, I'm going to have to put in my notice. I'm going to have to leave in 2021 because the NFL will be hiring full-time referees starting in 2021. And I think it'd be a pretty good damn referee. I got the pot belly. I'll be up in my late 50s, Brady. I think that's exactly what they're looking for crying out loud. And I'd be a damn good one. I know all the rules already, so I'm pretty much good on that.
You would be a horrible official.
No.
You could maybe like Pop Warner.
Let me tell you something. If I have anything in doubt, I throw the flag. Any doubt in my mind, the flag goes down. See, that way I cover my back.
Yeah, so
that.
Pace of play would be a problem in
Arnie
Spanier's
NFL. I don't care about pace of play. If I'm not sure, I got to throw the flag. I can't let the pass interference go like that, Brady. I'm telling you. Just don't let me referee Patriot games and Cowboy games. So that would
just Dolphin games and Giant games.
That would be good. Yeah. that would be very good. There was. And a referee that refereed the LSU football game that was an LSU fan. I want you to know that. It was on his Facebook page, and you'll have to look that article up. And it was really, really funny. It was hysterical on that. But anyway, getting back to the Patriots on when they were hated and when you figured out they were the most hated. It's probably as the Super Bowls kept coming along, and also Tom Brady's a big reason why you hate the Patriots because he just has everything great in life. You know, he's got the super wife, even the supermodel girlfriend. He's won Super Bowls. He's not, and for the most part, stayed injury-free except for that one year when Castle had to take over for him. He's a good-looking guy. He's a likable guy. Even if you want to hate him, Brady, he is a likable guy. And, you know, how many people are going to sell you his boxers to rejuvenate yourself? So, I mean, really, come on now.
You know what's amazing is that the Patriots won the Super Bowl in the 2001 season. And then in the 2003 and 2004 seasons, if I'm not mistaken, okay, or maybe it was 2004 and 2005, they had won three Super Bowls in either 4 or 3 in 5 years. And I don't know that people hate. All this article focused on was us hating them starting in 2007 with the Spygate stuff. But I would have thought that people would have been sick of the Patriots prior to that because of just all the winning.
Well, you know they cheated against the Miami Dolphins. I don't know if you know that story.
The snowplow game like 100 years ago?
They had a convict who was in jail, who was out on weekend furlough, get in a snowplow machine to pave the way to kick a field goal, which, by the way, is illegal. So they cheated all the way back then with a convict, for crying out loud. I get to some of the... was somebody ripping you on that one, Brady? I can't remember.
No. There's someone just giving me a correction, and I appreciate that. Zach in South Burlington reminds us that the Tuck Rule game led to Brady's first Super Bowl. So I had the year mixed up because I had said 2003 for the Tuck Rule, but it was 2002, and that was the same year, calendar year, that the Patriots won their first Super Bowl. So the Tuck Rule game against Oakland led to the Super Bowl win against the Rams.
All right, and what did Dan and Winooski say?
Dan says, as a Raiders fan, he's never gotten over the Tuck Rule. That's where his hate comes from. Also, I'm not looking forward to all the new bandwagon fans for Raider Nation.
Yes.
It comes with winning. But when the team changes cities and the team's about to leave cities, I don't know.
Well,
I think the Raider might be a little different.
It's going to be a tearful goodbye. By the way, my buddy Lincoln Kennedy, who works with me on Fox Sports Radio, has never gotten over the Tuck Rule also. I mean, he could even barely talk about it. Obviously, he played for the Raiders and played in that game, Brady. Can you imagine playing in that game? I would think that would... you know, being in that game, I'd have bitterness for the rest of my life over that thing. You know that?
Oh, absolutely. Craig in Essex, he calls you LeVarney since you said you want to be like LeArney for LeVar Ball. So he calls you LeVarney. And he says you should be a line judge.
What does a line judge do? They is that the one that calls off sides?
They like stand on the sidelines, so they don't have to run up and down the field like you do.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Bingo.
And you're not in jeopardy of getting lit up by a safety.
I was about to say back judge. What the back judge is like when you stand on the defensive side.
You're like 20 yards away.
Yeah, I can get hurt that way.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a drop the middle and somebody, you know what? Brady, work on this. Get me a high school refereeing gig one game this high school here in Vermont. They must need referees. They don't have enough referees, I'm sure. I'll referee a game. I know all the rules. I pretty much know all the rules. I don't have to know every one of them. Just the big rules out there, Brady.
I'm going to ask you a rule of baseball. Since you say you know everything, can you accurately describe the infield fly rule?
Yes, I can. Of course, runners on first and second, or runners on first, or bases loaded, with less than two outs, a pop fly.
You got it right there. That's all I wanted to know. Well, Jason, would you have been able to accurately describe the infield fly?
No, he would not have known what that is.
Yes?
No, you don't.
Yes.
I just gave it to you. Repeat what I said.
If there's a runner on first and second, or the base is loaded with less than two outs, and there's a pop-up in the infield, the batter's automatically out, so you can't drop the ball and get a double
play. How come I don't – when's the last time it was called in Major League Baseball? I mean, I don't even know if it's called this year, or am I just not paying attention?
No, you're not paying attention. It happens at least once a night, probably.
Does it? Because I'm like – I don't hear – oh, but major – infield fly rule.
I should come up with some scenarios.
See, I'm good. You know what? I'm going to be a referee.
Here.
Umpire, referee, whatever.
Here's a question
for
you.
Ask your questions now on the Tom Fried text line.
Here's a question for you. All right? Are you paying attention to me?
Yeah, paying attention. Go ahead.
All right. You're playing third base.
I'm playing third base.
Okay. There's a fly ball. Your feet are in fair territory.
My feet are in both of them.
Both your feet are in fair territory.
Okay.
But the ball is technically in foul territory. You've reached over the foul line, essentially. You are in fair territory. The ball is technically in foul.
Yes.
You drop the ball,
and
the guy runs to second for a double.
Yes.
What happens?
You didn't give me all the facts, my friend. Am I before the bag or after the bag?
You are after the bag.
Ha-ha!
You are after the bag.
That's a base hit.
Absolutely not.
That's not a base hit.
No.
Why is that? It went over fair base and third baseline.
No, the ball
foul territory.
The ball was in foul territory.
After the bag, who knows what it was when it crossed the bag, though? And both my feet are in.
Football cares where your feet are. Baseball doesn't.
That's if the ball's on the ground.
When I'm gonna referee? When I'm gonna umpire? That's like only football is what I know. Give me football. I'm telling you, I really want to referee or umpire a football game. Because that's like the easiest thing, but you got like seven other idiots out there that don't know what they're doing. So nobody knows if you're making a mistake or not. You know what I'm saying? I'm telling you, that's my. By the way, where do they get referees for the NFL? I mean, there's no 30-year-olds in the NFL that referee, do they? You don't see.
They have their other jobs. I mean,
Not any. Ed Hockley's an attorney.
Yeah,
I know.
And
Ed.
Gene Steratore owns a company in Pittsburgh.
But not anymore.
It's like a cleaning.
But that, I'm saying in 2021, that's all going to be gone.
Yeah,
they will be, which by the way, how much are they going to pay for full-time referees now? I think they make about $2.25, $2.50 roughly, give or take, on some of the big ones. So what are they going to double your pay if you're going to be full-time referees now? $500,000, $600,000. That's a damn good salary if you want to go and be an NFL. It's a thankless job, but it's a damn good salary if you want to be honest with you. I don't know, what are you going to do the other 6 months when you're not working the games? You just get vacation or something like that?
You go do college basketball.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to be full-time, I guess you couldn't.
Yeah. You don't have to do anything. You just sit around being fat and lazy. That's what I would do. I wouldn't do a damn thing, for crying out loud. All right, when we get back, do you have a problem with what Josh Rosen said, the quarterback out of UCLA? We're going to touch on that a little bit. That's certainly a big firestorm going on nationally. If you didn't hear that, we'll tell you about that. Coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Back to the Huddle, where you can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, Brady Toberty again. We're going to be Thursday, Rich's neck of the woods, no doubt about that.
We're going to be at the Poorhouse in South Burlington, go to bat with Labatt. And then Friday, we'll be out at the Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament in Jericho, technically.
I'm looking forward to that. I really am. Now, we are in the easy division, please.
Yes,
right?
We are in the easier division.
We better be in the easier division. And I would have to, you know, rub up the hamstring and get that going good. I'm afraid I can't. Am I going to be the only guy wearing a mitt in the outfield?
I think it'll be good. We're going to be doing the show there, though, so you won't have time to be taking the icy hot.
And... Well, I'll put it on while we're doing the show. But I got to wear a mitt. I got to wear a mitt. Am I the only one that's going to be wearing a mitt?
I mean, you shouldn't need one. You should be able to just catch.
No, but I could do that, but it's cheating. It gives me extra couple inches there. You know what I'm saying? I need some. I'm going to die for something. I want to be able to catch it.
You're not going to die.
You don't know that.
Can I tell you the Little League story I just told you?
Yeah.
This is pretty good.
Yeah.
So the Little League World Series, you know, the regionals are going on right now. We got the team from Essex Junction out there. Well, this is making the rounds on the internet now. There's a kid on the Essex Junction team who, when they put the little fact about themselves, you know, say like favorite school subject, favorite athlete, his little fact about himself. This is a kid from Essex Junction. Said his side fact has a crush on his teacher.
and they put it up there, huh?
And they put it up there. And they put the teacher's name.
Oh, get out of here.
So I wonder if she'll see it.
Right, get the teacher's name. I'll put up a picture so we can see what she looks like. Now I'm going to have to see that. And by the way, you could take a guess on who's going to have the more hits, me or Brady. So, see, I'm sweating this one because Rich isn't around to make me feel good on this one. So, you know, because Rich doesn't hit very well either.
Craig in Essex comes in with a home run call if you did hit one. Arnie goes yardy.
Oh, I like that.
In terms of the John Sterling.
See, that's why I want Jason to do the play-by-play on our 960 station. I think that'd be awesome. I mean, really, I think that'd be a lot of fun. You just blew it, Jason. I mean, you got to get on things like that. That would be a lot of fun. All right, Brady, do we have the audio on what Josh Rosen had to say? And why are people getting on him about this and making a big deal about this? That's what I don't understand.
Josh Rosen, quarterback UCLA, said basically that school and football don't mix. Simply put, school and football don't mix. And what are your thoughts on that? Because this is what people are talking about nationally today.
School and football don't mix because he said it was like two full-time jobs, yet there are people listening to this show right now who didn't get the benefit of getting a free scholarship and had to work either part-time or full-time jobs, Brady, while going to school full-time also. But I see what he's saying. I mean, football is a full-time job, and it's got to be absolutely – I mean, there's a reason why they get to pick their classes first. They're all day spending on football. He has a point. I mean, it's tough to be I don't want to use it as an excuse because there are ex-athletes that have become doctors and lawyers, but he makes a good point. I don't know why he caught a lot of flack over this, to be honest with you.
Because it's not impossible.
No, it's not.
It's not impossible. And that's why. And I have to say this. We get on our athletes, we get on our coaches for being vanilla, for not saying anything,
right,
for being cliche, and then we want to crush them when they go out and tell the truth. I happen to wholeheartedly disagree with what Josh Rosen says. I, however, am not mad at him for saying it. I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate the truth in this, and I wish more athletes would speak what they actually think rather than just a cloak of what they know the quote right answer is. Now, I wholeheartedly disagree because I played a college sport, and I didn't play at the Division I level, and I certainly didn't play at the UCLA level of college, but I mean, there's the kid Myron Roll, Florida State, a couple years ago. He was a Rhodes Scholar and a starter at Florida State. I mean, this can be done. If you think it's impossible, it's because you want it to be impossible.
Well, there's actually two parts to the quote. It says here, look, football and school don't go together, Rosen said. They just don't. Trying to do both is like trying to do two full-time jobs. There are guys who have no business being in school, but they're here because this is the path to the NFL. There's no other way. I happen to agree with that wholeheartedly. There's a lot of guys that are playing college football right now that have no business even getting accepted to the school that they're playing for or even being in college. It's disgusting, Brady, because they are getting great benefits and they have no business even studying at a higher academic institution.
Well, what is college for? College is to prepare you for the professional world and whatever you choose for that to be. If college is your ticket to the NFL and you're able to stay eligible and in most cases getting a 2.0, then what do I care what your motivation level is for really being there? But that's what it's about. Motivation level. If you want to make both of them work together and coincide together, you absolutely can.
But is it fair to accept these high school athletes that don't meet the academic requirements? Because a lot of them don't. A lot of them don't. I'll bet you 75% of the football players don't meet the academic
requirements. Oh, I totally disagree with that.
That don't meet the academic requirements that normal students do, and that they get in under, I don't know whatever rule you want to call it, but they get in under a lower scale than a lot of other people. Matter of fact, Joe Klatt and Brady Quinn were arguing about this, saying you can't win in Notre Dame because the academic standards are way too high.
And that's not true either. I totally don't believe in that either. The academics, look, every school has a niche. Okay, every single school has a niche, and sometimes your niche prohibits you from being able to win. I think we are in an age where Army, Navy, and Air Force will not win national championships like Army used to back in the 40s. It's too hard now to get
too structured
to get military students that can play at the level of Alabama. That's too difficult. They are not going to win. But Stanford was on the verge of national championships. Notre Dame played for a national championship just a few years ago against Alabama. Don't tell me that it's too hard. Yes, you have to get a different kind of kid. You have to get a different kind of football player. But you know what? They're out there, and they can be recruited.
There's not enough out there. Matter of fact, I heard Brady Quinn talking about matter of fact, they used up like per 100. They said most schools can recruit a kid, you know, per 100 that maybe 75 will meet the academic requirements. For a school like a Notre Dame or a Stanford, you may get a list of, instead of those 75, maybe 15 to 20. That's the difference. You know, you're fighting it over the same great academic. And by the way, to get into, is it Stanford? Or I think it's Stanford. You have to apply, get in, before they will offer you a scholarship, which is none other than any other school. No other school does it that way.
I'm not saying that recruiting isn't hard. I'm not saying it's not a grind, and I'm not saying it's not a battle. But look, I've done it, and I know, again, I did it at a very low level. I did it at a Division III junior college level. But those recruiting challenges exist in a lot of places. When I was coaching baseball at Norwich, I saw what it was like to try to get civilian kids in versus core kids in. And you know what? You have to expand your recruiting base. You have to get military-type kids. But now you've expanded your recruiting base to the entire country. It can be done. It can be done at Stanford. Andrew Luck went to Stanford. Christian McCaffrey got to Stanford. And you know what? Those guys were game changers that led them to the Rose Bowl and led them to wins.
Well, I'm not saying it's not impossible. I'm just saying it's stacked against you. Nothing's 100%, but it is big time stacked against you in schools like
but
that.
But we're not even talking about Notre Dame and Stanford. We're talking about Josh Rosen at UCLA.
Well, UCLA, the same thing.
Another,
that's a hard school, yeah.
A very high-level school, and a school that's always been hard to get into. My mom is from Southern California. She didn't get into UCLA. She was a phenomenal student, and she ended up going to Cal State Fullerton, could not get into UCLA. It is difficult, but you know what? There are regular students and the general student population that are working a full-time job and paying for their own school. There are people that are working 3-4 part-time jobs and paying for their own school. It is absolutely difficult, but it's not impossible. And Will Cain was on Mike and Mike today, and he had this to say about it because he echoes my sentiments exactly.
I think he's fighting a long history and tide of people successfully balancing football and school. And not just football, any sport and school. For that matter, life and school. I was a collegiate athlete. I know how hard it is. I know what it's like to wake up and have a practice from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. and then come back again and have a practice from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. and to try to schedule classes in that window between 8 a.m. and 1 p.m. and then again at night. It's difficult. But difficult and not fitting together are not the same thing. And I think Josh Rosen sounds spoiled because he doesn't know, apparently, what other students in the world go through as well.
Let me ask this. Is it, because maybe we're arguing two different things. Is it easier to be a student athlete now or back in my day?
I think back in your day.
Because?
I think the school load is probably a little easier, would be my guess. I don't know that
for a fact.
I think
it's easier now because nowadays, like when you come in, they like make you take like a summer school class or two, so you could only take like one or two classes for the fall. Matt Leinart had like ballroom dancing his last year, you know, stuff like that. They come up with scams like that.
And you have more resources. There's more tutoring and more help centers and more teacher hours and all that. But I think your time is more accounted for now than it probably was back in the day. You have 6 a.m. practice and two-a-days and multiple sports and double sessions and weight room time is structured here. Now you have NCAA-mandated times where you can and can't practice. I think more of your time is likely more accounted for.
By the way, if you're a UVM student or you played in college, you tell us how you manage your time. 802-655-6600. 667-2655-6672. Because I see the UVM basketball players out and about on town all the time. I'm like, what are you guys studying, for crying out? They don't study.
The UVM basketball team had like a over a 3-0 average.
Study. They could have a 4-0 if they studied, Brady. Come on now.
Oh, stop.
I see them out all over the place.
It can be absolutely balanced. Look, and I'll be the first to say that I didn't work as hard athletically as I should have when I played in college. And even if I had worked as hard as I wanted to at Division III, it would have been a third as hard as the athletes at Division I. But if you say it's certainly not impossible.
Nothing's impossible, but it is stacked against
Andrew Luck could do it. Craig Krenzel, the old Ohio State coach, could do it. The old Ohio State quarterback was studying molecular biology and getting a 4-0.
I forget the player's name that just retired from the NFL after 2 years because he wants to go to MIT and study mathematics as a graduate student.
Mm-hmm.
I forget his name. Yes, somebody like that, it's not impossible because, you know, when you have a mind like that and MIT accepts you for a graduate student to study mathematics, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, something like that's probably easy for
then
you.
Then fine. These guys are working to be Rhodes Scholars and get 4-0s. Well, what about the guy that just needs to work to get a 2-0? The guy who does just want to skate by. It's not impossible to do that either.
No, you're 100% right on that. That's easy. But does that get you anywhere when you're taking ballroom dancing and English 101 and you know?
If your goal is NFL or bust, then yes, I would say it does.
Let's get to a couple calls. 802-655-6672. Joe is in Hinesburg. Joe, good afternoon. You're on 101.3 ESPN. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, it kills me, but Ernie, I'm 100% in your court.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of, you know, look at Boston College, look at Stanford, look at Notre Dame. You get these really bright kids. God, they're attorneys before they start in the league. You know, Matty Ice, God, the kid's bright.
Yeah.
You know, and when it's all said and done, I mean, are we really doing a favor to a lot of these kids? Because, yeah, they get their break in the NFL. If a team picks them up, you know, a guy like Belichick wouldn't necessarily, depending on their Wonderlic score.
Right.
And, you know, so here they put all their effort into athletics. Maybe they get on a team, but they're not smart enough to read the playbook once they're there, and they're toast. They've got no benefit of the school, and these are the guys who really need the NFL. I'd like to see the success percentage rate of the ones who had the 2-0 and how long they actually last in the league.
That's
because they can't adapt to the Bucs.
Yeah, and, you know, you bring up a good point. You know, Brady, how they say the average person plays 3.2 years or something like that? I don't even know if there's a study on this. I'd like to know, do people with a 4.0 or a 3.0 play longer in the NFL than people with a 2.0? I'd like to see if I guess there's no correlation, though, because if you have a 2.0, then you were all football, and you were all, that's all you were. I don't know. I don't know if there's a correlation on that, to be honest with you.
I think when we talk about college teams that are bound by recruiting high recruiting standards, again, Matt Ryan, they played for a Big East championship, I believe, when he was there at Boston College.
But it's not impossible. But when you, like, Duke, schools like that, Virginia's like one of the best law schools, so that's graduate school. UCLA, it's impossible. It really is impossible to get these kids in. To be honest, it's the academics. I went down with my niece to Middlebury. I wanted to run out screaming. It scared me, and I'm not even going to school there, and scared me, Brady.
And Middlebury and Tufts and those schools and Amherst, all those schools can compete for national championships because they can recruit nationwide. It's not a recruiting hindrance to them. It's a recruiting help.
All right. When we get back, we didn't get to the Floyd Mayweather interview, so, I mean, we got to touch on that real quick. We got the 32 teams in 32 days. We'll take a look at the Lions. We'll get to some Boston Red Sox stuff, and we have a great last story standing. Also, what's coming up at Champlain Valley Game Night?
I'm going to talk more about the Floyd Mayweather interview and just some things that are upsetting me about society as a whole as it relates to sports.
Wow, look at you getting very political today.
It's not so much political, just frustrated.
All right, this is 101.3 ESPN.
3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. I want to get to the Floyd Mayweather interview. He was speaking, you're talking about the woman Stephen A. Smith, right? What a bunch of baloney this one was. This had me cracking up. You have the cut on that, Jason?
We've got four of them. Which one do you want?
Well, let's start with number one. Let's start with the beginning. Which one was that, Brady?
Well, hold on. You want the ones that are going to disappoint you, I assume? The ones that are going to make you mad?
Well, I'll just take any one of them.
All right, give us number one about what kind of fight it's going to be.
This can't be a defensive fight. I got to go down. Gotta do what I gotta do. Because I owe the public for the Pacquiao fight. Since they wasn't pleased with the Pacquiao fight, they're going to be pleased with this fight right here.
All right, so all of a sudden he cares what the public thinks about now? He never cared about what the public thought before. He has to take it to, I do agree with him, he has to go ahead and take it to him, to McGregor, and try to kick his butt, because the longer this thing goes, the longer his name looks bad. But he's going to just try to pummel the guy, but I don't believe he cares about what the public
thinks. He's got to find that fine balance, though, right? I get what you're saying. If he lets it go 9 rounds, he looks bad. But if he beats him in 1, then everyone's mad that he paid $100.
Yeah, they already got the money, though.
They
got
to get him through.
Yeah.
It's got to go between 3 and 5, I think.
I don't think he's going to carry him on this one. I think he's just going to go and try to bust his face in. Give me another one, Jason. What's number 2?
When you're fighting at this level, there's no losing. When you're fighting at this level, there's no losing. I mean, I ain't never known a man to make hundreds and hundreds of millions. That's a loser.
Oh, he's right about that. I mean, that's a way to take away your edge. But yeah, when you're making hundreds of millions of dollars, which I've always said to you, Brady, when you make a whole bunch of money, you really don't care about winning and losing as much. You would think you'd care about more, but that you got the money, there's nothing else to worry about. But he's right. There's no losers when you're both making. I'll just average it out to $100 million. I'm not even sure what each one's getting on.
Again, I hate these comments, but I just told you.
True.
I just told you. I like when athletes are honest and transparent. I disagree. It takes away my sporting innocence and my wish that it's about competition and not money, but he told the truth. I don't like what he said, but I appreciate that he said it.
Now, you're not going to fight like you're Rocky in Rocky I, where you have no money, you got these old raggedy sweats, you're living in a broken down apartment, and you got you're eating raw eggs, and you got turtles named Cuff and Link. I mean, come on now. But if you're living in a mansion because you've already had a couple of fights and you've made millions and millions of dollars, you don't have the drive that you did when you were back in that. It's just natural. All of us are like that. It's
Although LeBron seems to have a pretty good, Tom Brady's got it.
The difference there is they've got the money to keep them young and healthy and have chefs and gyms and all that stuff.
Saying Tom Brady and LeBron have an edge that maybe Floyd Mayweather doesn't appear to have.
Well, the guy with the biggest edge were Michael Jordan and Kobe. I don't know anybody with a bigger edge than those two guys, unless I'm missing something. Michael and Kobe have to be 1A and 1B with the biggest edge to win, no matter if they had a gazillion dollars. It doesn't make a difference.
You know what Floyd Mayweather reminds me of when he's talking about, oh, there's no losers, and he even said
a carnival barker.
If I lost, it's not a huge deal, basically. He reminds me of the movie Jerry Maguire, and he reminds me of my favorite character in that movie, Rod Tidwell. So give me the Rod Tidwell cut, Jason, here. Give me that.
Show me the money. Let's look at
Show you the money.
Oh, no, you can do better than that, Jerry. I want you to say it with your meaning, brother. Hey, I got Bob Sugar on the other line. I better hear you say it.
Yeah, no. Show you the money.
Not show you. Show me the money.
Show me the money.
Yeah. Just got louder.
Show me the money.
That's it, brother. But you got to yell that stuff.
Show me the money.
I need to feel you, Jerry.
Show me the money.
Jerry, you better yell. Show me the money.
There you go. Show me the money. So, yeah, that's a classic scene. There's no doubt about that. That's one of my favorites.
Can we get to 32 teams?
Yeah. All right. So, anyway, that's the latest. But real quick, though, wrapping that fight up, you're still going with McGregor? Is that what your pick was?
No, I'm going with Mayweather.
I mean, excuse me, Mayweather.
Max Kellerman said his odds should be a billion to one, and he won't even land one punch.
I think it really should be about 100 to 1 or 1 to 100 in favor of Mayweather.
Yeah.
They say it's supposed to be the
most lopsided bets.
Yeah, in all of Las Vegas, if it was on the real odds there. All right, time for 32 teams in 32 days, Jason. Let's go ahead and get to the Detroit Lions. Everybody's favorite team, Brady, is it not, or what?
Do we have any Lion fans up here? We actually do. Our buddy Jack Cordy at NBC5.
Is he a Lions fan?
He's a Lions fan.
Oh, poor Jack. Jack.
He's a big Lions fan. Team went 9-7 last year, got to the playoffs, lost to the Seahawks in the first round. Biggest questions. Life without Calvin Johnson. I mean, really, you do have Marvin Jones, you do have Golden Tate, but you don't have Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, Golden Tate, I know a lot of people are high on him. I've never been the biggest fan of him, to be honest with you. And correct me if I'm wrong, didn't they lose their last three games, the Lions, and they still backed into the playoffs?
They did back into the playoffs.
Right, so they did back into the playoffs there. I thought they were going to build on that. Look, I like Matthew Stafford. I really do. There's a lot of criticism on him saying that he's never going to take the Lions any further than a playoffs, maybe a first-round loss, and that's all you can really expect on that. Offensively, though, they're not in great shapes, to be honest with you, and I'm a little worried about the running game also. I don't think they're as strong as they were last year, and you got to keep Stafford healthy because that guy's getting rocked, and he doesn't show it a lot, but the guy was worn down at the end of last year.
Yeah, the Lions' running back situation last year was really unfortunate. A lot of injuries. Amir Abdullah.
Is that the guy from Nebraska? Was that the running back from Nebraska? I don't remember.
Amir Abdullah? Yeah, he is from Nebraska.
Okay, so yeah, and he was a good one. Yeah. I don't know what happened.
He was hurt. Theo Riddick was hurt as well. You were down to Zach Zenner, remember, the third-string running back.
Right.
You were down to him in the playoffs, a rookie who was out of South Dakota State. Or not a rookie, but a guy who was out of South Dakota State, you know, who was a second-year player last year. I like some pieces of that defense. I like Ziggy Ansah getting after the quarterback. Haloti Ngata in the middle is a run stopper.
Haloti Ngata is a good the one they got from the Packers.
The Ravens.
I mean the Ravens. What did I say? The Packers. Ravens.
Yeah, Darius Slay is a very good defensive back, one of the tops in the NFL, but I worry about the rest of that defense. A lot of no-namers on that team.
Yeah, I was looking at what they had in the draft. I know they took the inside linebacker. They took a couple of Florida kids, one and two, but other than that, no skill. I know they got the kid from Northern Illinois, the wide receiver, Kenny Galladay, but I'm not so sure how he's going to fit in. And that's what you said. They need wide receivers. And like I said, I'm not so sure about Golden Tate. I don't think they're going to be a second-place team this year. The only problem is Green Bay's already won that division. Who's in second? Is it Minnesota? Is it Detroit? Or who am I missing?
It's not going to be Chicago.
Well, there you go. Somebody got to finish in second. So all arrows point toward Detroit, but if it was a normal year and it was a tough division, I wouldn't give it to them, Brady, not at all.
I like Stafford. I like that fast track they play on there inside Ford Field. I like that the Lions are on Thanksgiving. I like that they get their press once a year for sure. They need to stay healthy, as is the case with most teams. They can ill afford injuries. They can't afford another year where they have no running game.
Easy division. How's that scheduled for them, though? Is it a tough schedule? I know they open up at the Colts, so that's going to be a win. They play the Jets. Oh, no, that's the preseason.
It's in the Colts, yes.
Regular season, they got the Cardinals.
And then the Giants.
Oh, that could be 0-2. That's 0-3. At Minnesota, 0-4. Panthers, 0-5. At the Saints, 0-6. Steelers, 0-7. It's not going to be a good year for the Lions. How about that? Not a good year for the Lions, Brady.
I like Matt Stafford. I like their ability to score.
Well, there you go. 32 teams in 32 days. Who are we going to be looking at tomorrow? Who comes after DE in Detroit? What are we going to get there?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't know who it is either. So we'll have to be surprised about that. Real quick on the Red Sox, four-game lead.
Yep,
four-game lead over the Yankees. They will play the last game, not the last game, the last game in this set, because I believe they play the Rays again. Am I wrong about that? Or is this the last game?
This is the last game, but yeah, and then we're going to get the Yankees on Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, so that's off the
Thursday.
Big one.
And we're going to talk about the Packers tomorrow, by the way.
Okay, and that's the big one, too. With how many games left with the Yankees? 10, you said?
A bunch.
Yeah, I think
a bunch
like
of games.
10. Yeah, so obviously,
yeah,
with,
10.
Yeah, so obviously, I think with a 4-game lead, this is what happened before. Remember, after the All-Star break, I think it was like a 3-game lead, and they had a 3-game or 4-game set against the Yankees, and we're like, either they're going to put them away, or this is going to be a whole other close race. Same situation. Either they're going to put them away, or the Yankees are going to get right back in this thing and take the lead. Last story standing, and we've got a good one. That's coming up next, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, Brady, get to Last Story Standing, but this is a good one. I like this one.
I would feel so insulted if this were me. Longtime Major League reliever and even a closer at one point in his career, Ernesto Friere. He was in the Yankee system earlier this year. Well, he got traded yesterday from the Rangers to my Mariners for cash considerations. No players, cash considerations. And Arnie, you know what those cash considerations were?
What are they, my friend?
$1.
Why do you have to be so insulting? I mean, seriously, can't you... Can't you make it look good and say we'll throw in a player to be named later? Just never give the player. Just make it look good. You know what I mean?
$1.
Was this because somebody's mad, or why would they do it for a dollar? I don't.
I have no idea.
To save salary. I don't.
Frieri's not that great, but $1.
What a slap in the face!
What would you be traded for? What are you worth?
At least a dozen basketballs. I'm thinking. Might not be any cash considerations. I'm thinking more like a couple of cans of ravioli and stuff like that. Mostly food, no cash considerations. All right, what's coming up on Champaign Valley game night tonight?
I'm going to get in a little more to the Floyd Mayweather conversation with Stephen A. Smith. We'll leave it at that.
That's coming up at right now, so stick around for that. Jason's going to have a SportsCenter update for the last time for intern Caleb. For Jason, for Brady, I'm Arnie right here on 101.3 ESPN.